Gardner at the left point, spins it down in behind the Hawk net. Sebastian Aho there. Aho with 1:15 on the clock. Was wedged off the puck, but it's put out in front. And Svechnikov shoots, they score! So Andrei Svechnikov, who scored a power play goal to get the Canes started this afternoon, scores the capper. It's 4-0 Carolina with 1:11 left in the game.
Yeah, you heard it here a little bit earlier as the Blackhawks lose to the Carolina Hurricanes on the road. 4-0 was the final. As we move into the beats here, Andy Mazur and Kevin Powell with you until 6 o'clock. As mentioned, we'll have the World Series coverage, Game 4, pregame beginning at 6 o'clock right here on WGN Radio. Talking hockey right now, and it's gotten kind of ugly offensively here for the Blackhawks, and it's not a secret. And there's been some line juggling and some other things that have gone on. A guy that's been right at the pulse of it all, Scott King, who co-hosts the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast here on WGNRadio.com, also a contributor to WGNRadio.com, will join us here now. And Scott, I know you wrote a little bit about the fact that they needed to juggle the lines. They did that today, and it resulted in the first shutout of the year.
Yeah, hey, Andy, Kevin, what's up, guys? Look, you know, heading into this year, because of last year, I think people thought the concern was going to be the defense. And Stan Bowman went out and he got guys like Kelvin DeHaan and Ali Mata. And the defense has not been the issue, especially when you look at the 7-game homestand and the first road game today since Prague, losing to Carolina 4-0. It's, you look at the numbers, 2 goals in their last 3 games, 3 power play goals out of 29 power plays. Not good. Not good in the first 9 games. And it's not just the lack of scoring, lack of offensive production. It's worse because it's your top guys. And, yeah, he did juggle the lines a little bit. You know, he didn't quite read my blog and get to all of my concerns, Jeremy Colleton. But he moved some guys around, tried to spread the wealth a little bit. I still think what you need to do now, rather than sending Dylan Strom down to the fourth line today, where he looked good. I mean, he got the message because he's had a slow start, but so have all the guys who were top scorers and contributors last year. I would have liked to seen Strom centering Kane and DeBrincat again for the second line, which, you know, they were a powerhouse last year. So I think that could have been a good way to get Kane, Strom, and DeBrincat going. We'll see here. You know, and I guess the light at the end of the tunnel was that there was a better effort kind of across the board here, but, you know, with 4 straight losses, they're going to have to do a little more than that.
2-5-2 is not what I was anticipating, Scott, through the first 9 games of the season, especially that they played better down the stretch last year. Jeremy Colleton had a full offseason. Look, we've seen the Hawks make dramatic changes in season. I'm not saying anything with Colleton, but, and I don't even necessarily say I'm hitting the panic button here, but do you foresee changes happening if this thing keeps trending in this direction?
Well, I think he, you know, and naturally, I think he can juggle the lines a little more, and I think he will. We'll see tomorrow. But I don't, you know, I don't know. Stan Bowman got the right guys defensively. I don't know who else, you know, later on you might get in the trade or who else you might try from Rockford. I think he's just, you know, maybe the guys got the message today with the effort, and he needs more, especially from those top guys. They're in a rut, and, you know, you can't say it's the beginning of the season anymore because maybe 4 games, maybe even 5 games you can say that. But we're at 9 games now. It's going to be 10 tomorrow. It's a big sample size. Or it's a sample size. It's not just a, you know, just a brief look. It's getting bigger out of games you can draw from and kind of see the way things are trending. And it did a decent job of starting to stop the bleeding in terms of a better all-around effort, better 60-minute game. And you hope that, you know, they get some goals tomorrow, and it would be huge, a huge step in the right direction if they could pull out a win.
The biggest reason they're off to a slow start is because of what, in your opinion, Scott?
Good question. Yeah, I think that, you know, we've already talked a lot about it, but just generally the offense. Specifically, I think you can just look at the power play, because you hear guys talk about it all the time, is you get confidence and momentum from your power play when it's, you know, you don't have to score goals. You just have to have something going. There's, I think it was maybe not this game today, but the last game, I think out of maybe two power plays. They just had one shot on goal, if I'm correct. But they're not making a lot happen on the power play. Something that keeps happening is they're shooting pucks directly into traffic, and not just like a little bit of traffic in front of the net, but like a bunch of bodies. And when they have open lanes, they're just passing the puck around. So you need better quality looks on the power play, and you need more shots. And that when you have a decent power play, like I said, you don't have to score. If guys are creating good chances, that's going to give you momentum heading into your 5-on-5 play.
Scott, amen. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've listened to the game here on the radio and gone, just shoot the puck. I mean,
anyone who ever yells that at the TV or at a hockey game is right in this instance. You know, these first nine games, at least. It's not that simple, but right now with what I was saying, with the lanes being open, it kind of is. You just got to fire off a shot. You know, something the Blackhawks have done in the past because they had so much talent, Andy, is try to make some cute plays, you know, like a no-look pass or set up a highlight reel goal for somebody on a power play, but you got a lane open. You just got to take a shot because you need more shots, and I'll get you more momentum.
Scott, how do you see the goaltending situation play out the rest of the year? You think it's going to be mostly 50-50 between Crawford and Leonard?
You know what? Like I said, we're getting to a bigger sample size here. Before the last couple games, it looked like he was going every other guy, and then Leonard was able to put together two real nice quality starts. The first time he got two consecutive starts, second of which being the last game before today. So heading into the season and him getting the first start in Prague, Crawford, that is, I thought it was going to be Crawford's net, predominantly with those guys splitting a decent amount of games, because you got two quality goaltenders, Leonard and Vezina, trophy finalists last year. You're going to try to get a lot out of both guys, so you got a guy going in fresh no matter who it is. But I think Leonard's kind of made a better case for himself recently that he might be the guy seeing more games, especially for now. And Corey today in Carolina, you know, the 4-0 loss, I thought that, you know, one time he was completely screened on a power play. I think it was the first goal. He couldn't see anything. And then some other ones, the defense giving up too much, but you know, the offense giving up just as much and not having a lot of possession. So Corey, maybe one, maybe two of those he would like back today, but you're not gonna win any games without scoring any goals.
Scott, as we wrap it up, I want you to be able to talk a little bit about, because tomorrow we know is Hockey Fights Cancer Night, and we heard a little bit of your chat with him, with Chris Bowden on the postgame show, but I know you had a chance to catch up with Edzo, and such a great story, and a great story of perseverance in the face of suffering through some cancer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you cannot say enough good things about a guy like Eddie Olczyk. If you missed the postgame show, you can read the blog I did from our sit down with Eddie before Thursday night's game, just generous with his time to give us the interview. And I believe it'll be in our podcast as well, probably Monday morning, but he wrote a book and, you know, called Beating the Odds in Hockey and in Life. And that's what he really did. I mean, you go back to a guy who was an American born player, obviously from Chicago area, drafted number 3 by his hometown team and has a great career, is a phenomenal broadcaster. And he's a guy that, you know, you guys know from being around him, he just has time for everybody.
he's the best.
One of those guys that has the skill, and it's a sincere thing with him that he makes everyone feel like they're the most important person in the room and just the nicest guy. And when somebody goes through something like he did, that's just phenomenal. So in the blog, and maybe you heard about it, for those of you who are listening to the postgame show, just great stories in his book, and that's kind of what I tried to ask him about in his in the interview I did with him for the blog, talking about how he had recurring. There's one story from his book I got him to retell that he had recurring nightmares, I guess, when he was a kid that he couldn't get into his first NHL game. He made the mistake of telling the trainer, and I guess the trainer tells the parking attendant not to let him in. He literally couldn't get into his first NHL game. A recurring nightmare he had for years came through because one of the someone on the medical staff played a trick on him.
Yeah, so, that's the one Chris
played. That in his book, and what's that?
Yeah, Chris played that one a little bit today.
Oh, awesome.
It was good.
Yeah,
it was stuff, definitely good.
Yeah, stuff like that and just, you know, going through his first goal and his first NHL game. He's just the best, and what I've read of the book, well, it was phenomenal, and it's always great to talk to him.
Scott, we appreciate you taking some time here, and enjoy the night tomorrow night, and hopefully the Blackhawks will get some offense going against the Kings.
I hope so. We'll see. Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
you
got Scott.
Scott King joining us from the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast here on WGNRadio.com and also the blog here at WGNRadio.com as well.
I might have to double dip tomorrow, Andy. I'm covering the Bears game alongside Adam Hoag for the station, but then maybe I'll just go be a fan at night because it's a 6 o'clock face-off. Bears are done by 3, and maybe I'll do a double dip. But we'll see what sort of attitude I have after watching the Chicago Bears play.
Well, it's hopefully you'll have a good attitude after watching the Bears play their game tonight or tomorrow night.
Yes, sir. Do you have federal student loan debt? Kaplan Law Firm has the secret to lowering your monthly payment and eliminating thousands of dollars in federal student loan debt. If you work in the public sector, are a fireman, police officer, doctor, or nurse, you're likely qualified for thousands of dollars of forgiveness of your federal student loans. Not in the public sector, Kaplan Law Firm can still help to reduce your monthly student loan payments. Give RAE Kaplan a call at 312-294-8989 or visit financialrelief.com.
How will this winter compare to last winter? Tom Skilling lays out his long-range forecast. That's Monday's cover story on WGN-TV News at 9.
If Breeze says he's healthy, the doctors say he's healthy. Murray into the end zone. This is about to be 27 unanswered points for the Saints.
That was not fun last week for the Bears, who lose to the Saints without Drew Breeze.
Whatever the complete opposite of fun is, Andy, that's what it was.
It was not fun. I guess that would be the answer to that. But I got to be honest with you, and I try to look at the Bears with the glass half full based on what happened last year, but there's not a whole lot to get on board with right now.
I bought in on this team going into this season based off what I saw last year and with the anticipation that Mitch Trubisky and the offense could be more consistent and even better than they were last year. Andy, as I do sports with Roe in the afternoon, mm-hmm. and Roe is not a big fan of Mitch Trubisky,
right.
I've tried to keep perspective and stayed centered on the Mitch Trubisky story over the last 3 years, meaning I didn't want to rush to judgment on Mitch Trubisky. I know a lot of people were done with him. We're counting him out. I said, let's wait, and I'm not going to factor in the Mahomes comparison. That's not his fault. He was drafted second overall by the Bears. But currently, Andy, I am like Rocky in Rocky IV. I've got the towel in my fist. Roe is like Apollo Creed's trainer telling me to throw the damn towel.
Yeah.
Mitch Trubisky is Apollo Creed. The Russian is opposing defense is pummeling Apollo Creed. And I've got the towel firmly in my hand, Andy, but I just have yet to throw the damn towel despite being told I should throw the towel.
Tell me if I'm sort of on base here, because I see the biggest difference between Mitch Trubisky this year and last year is there was a running game.
Yeah.
They actually handed the ball up. They had seven rushing attempts last year, a franchise low for one game. Tariq Cohen averaging less than 4 yards per play.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously?
Everything about the offense has just been horrendous. I think Matt Nagy deserves a lot of blame. Mitch Trubisky does deserve some blame because, yes, they have yet to establish anything resembling a running game. It's
None.
Been horrendous. Part of that falls on the line as well. There's blame to go around. The only person that's been playing consistently good football is Allen Robinson. Every week he's come out and ball. Outside of that, I can't think of a single player that has stood out to me and has had even a decent season so far. The change with Kyle Long going on IR, Rashad Cowher going at right guard, that didn't obviously seem to help very much with the offense as well. And I think that's why, I mean, look, you heard the Boo Birds in that clip. It was it was ugly at Soldier Field. I was there. And the Boo Birds really came after that first possession, which was a 3-and-out. Then Mitch Trubisky misses a wide-open Taylor Gabriel. And look, I realize the Chargers are 2-5, but they've got Phillip Rivers at quarterback. Maybe one of the more underappreciated quarterbacks of this era because he was overshadowed by the Mannings and the Bradys and the Breezes.
Yeah.
Phillip Rivers puts up monster numbers. I'm not counting him out. They're banged up, whatever. So were the Saints. The Saints came to town without Drew Brees, without Alvin Kamara, without their tight end, without their third receiver. There are no excuses. They should have won that game. So even if the Chargers, I'm not discounting any of that. This is a desperate LA Chargers team. They've lost 3 straight. They've lost in really, really gut-wrenching fashion as well. They had the ball at the 1-yard line last week in the final seconds. They got the ball in. It was called back. It was a complete mess. Do not count out the Chargers and Phillip Rivers. Look, the Bears are the favorites. What are they, 4-point favorites now? I think I'm picking the Bears, but I could easily not pick them tomorrow. They've shown us no flashes, at least offensively. Defensively, we did. we saw them for the first few weeks. They were ferocious up until really the London game. John Gruden basically provided the league a blueprint. How do you beat this Bears defense, which is isolate Khalil Mack, run a power offense, run the ball down their throat, run away from Khalil Mack, short, quick passes with routes for your quarterback to get the ball out. It's been 2 weeks now where the defense hasn't really looked overwhelming like they were in the first four games or so of the season. So this is where we are right now. I can't believe we're even talking about this team like this. They're 3-3. Going into the season, the anticipation was this could be a team that could go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. I bought in on that. I predicted the Bears would win the Super Bowl considering all the hype. They have a ton of talent. How quickly things have turned. I mean, you just heard the Boo Birds.
Yeah.
It is full-blown panic mode among Bears fans right now. And I think they have reason to be panicking. This is a moment where things could really, really slide for the Bears. At 3-3, you're telling me you're 3-4 after this week if things go sideways in the off. If the offense looks anything like they did last week, they're losing tomorrow.
Yeah, so much to chew on with that because I think there's a lot of things that go hand in hand. First of all, last year they played a last place schedule. This year you're playing a first place schedule. Again, you know, you can't design who you're playing. You got to play who you play when you play them, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's the league schedule. And you have to try to win every game. Now, the offense is not only affecting the offense. To me, the offense is affecting the defense because the defense is off the field for three plays.
The time of possession last week was 35 minutes to 25.
It's ridiculous.
You rarely see that large of a discrepancy when it comes to time of possession in the NFL. I mean, normally a few minutes here and there, but that was significant. It felt like the defense. That's why I haven't really laid in the defense, and I'm not panicking about the defense. There's so much talent there, and they've proven how great they can be. And look, you got to factor in all the things too. The defense is watching what we're watching.
Yeah.
You got to think to themselves, they're thinking, we're going to have to win this game.
We got to score.
Eddie Jackson's going to have a pick six. Something's going to happen. So I haven't laid in the defense. I'm not overly concerned about the defense. I think there are some question marks, but it is all on the offense. It's on Matt Nagy. It is on Mitch Trubisky. Do they pull the plug on Trubisky at halftime if he looks like he did last week?
You might have to. I mean, you might have to. And you know, again, Chase Daniel is not really what you would say would be
he's a career backup.
A rallying cry because, right. You know, he did a couple of nice things in a couple of games last year because he had a better grasp of the offense. But that's about it. I mean, the one thing defensively I will panic about a little bit is the loss of Akeem Hicks.
Yes,
because
totally.
That has really changed the dynamic.
When he went out,
that's when John Gruden started to do what you were talking about.
Totally agree. It's something to definitely keep an eye on.
All right, Bears and the L.A. Chargers. Still hard for me to think about the L.A. Chargers as well.
It's okay.
That'll be at Soldier Field. Hamp, OB, and Coz will have the postgame show for you tomorrow starting at 3 o'clock. We're going to get a check of news, and when we come back on the beat, Paul Sullivan's going to join us. We'll talk a little World Series and a little Cubs and White Sox baseball here on 720 WGN. As we roll on, this is The Beat on 720 WGN. Andy Mazur alongside Kevin Powell as we take you up till 6 o'clock. That's when we'll have pregame coverage of World Series game numeral 4 from Washington, D.C.
I'm enjoying this, Andy. We're nestled up here on the 18th floor of 303 Wacker as it continues to rain in Chicago.
It continues to pour. It's a little chilly outside, and you know, you don't think about baseball at this time. But you know, we do. We have some stories that are going on, and to help us cover those, we turn to one of our good friends, Tribune writer Mr. Paul Sullivan. Sully, how are you doing this Saturday?
Doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing all right. You know, I think the story we need to cover at least first is the Northside town with the Cubs making their choice of David Ross. First of all, give me your thoughts on that, and if you don't like it, what's wrong with it? If you do like it, tell me why also.
I'm kind of wait and see. I do think that he was the choice all along, and probably for much longer than any of us knew. You know, I know they had to go through a process of hiring or searching for interviewing a bunch of people, but it just seemed like it was a fait accompli, and it could be a very good move. I mean, he's a smart guy. He knows the players, he knows the team, he knows the media, he knows basically everything about the organization. He's been working under Theo for a couple of years now. So, there's really no excuses. They're going to try and win. They're not going to rebuild. And it's worked with some other teams with first-year managers, Rocco Baldelli, Aaron Boone. So it just kind of seems like this is the way of the world now.
I was actually okay with the Cubs deciding to move on from Joe Maddon. That's not a knock on Maddon. I'm not putting the blame on his shoulders. At the end of the day, it comes down to the players and personnel. You covered him for 5 years. Did you think it was the right move to let Maddon walk?
Oh, no. I thought they should have kept Maddon, personally. I think once you do win a championship with the Cubs, you know, you should kind of get a little bit of leeway, at least more than, you know, 3 years after they win it, he's gone. But, you know, there's no sense dwelling on it anymore. He's gone, and people got to move on. I wish he would have stayed. I didn't think it was the right move, but... you know, now it's David Ross's team, and I think Cub fans will get behind him because, number one, they all know him. Most of them, I would say, are really supportive of this.
Paul Sullivan of the Tribune joining us here on the beat, 720 WGN. Sully, I'm of the camp that thought you would know a lot about how much involvement the front office would have on day-to-day operations of this team by who they hired. I mean, if they hired Joe Girardi, who I think was the other candidate I think a lot of fans would have gotten behind, it would have been more of an established manager who would have probably not welcomed a lot of insight from those above him. But now you got a first-year guy who's been in the organization, as you point out. Is this kind of lending itself to a little more, you know, not day-to-day meddling, but maybe series-to-series meddling?
No, I think maybe day-to-day is right. I mean, that's the way it is with a lot of teams now. So that's the one thing the Cubs probably could have said the last few years is they're, you know, they let Joe pretty much do what he wanted. I don't think they told him what lineups to make, although they do have an analytics team that, you know, I'm sure threw a lot of stats at Joe. Certainly didn't work for the leadoff spot, whichever guy he tried in there automatically went into the tank. It was just unbelievable. I do think they want someone that they can, you know, collaborate with on a daily basis before games, game planning and stuff like that. And certainly you would think Ross would be more receptive to that than Joe.
So what do you think the Cubs do this offseason in terms of free agency, possible trades? What do you foresee?
I do see, you know, some significant trades, at least one, I would think, of a core player, just based on what Theo's been saying for the last year or so. And I also think that, you know, guys like Elmora, Happ, they've got to be thinking that they might be going too because they didn't really have good years. And, you know, how long can you wait on these guys, even though Happ did have a good ending? So I would say that, yeah, he's got to make some changes. It's just, you know, it was that kind of a year that I think people need some change.
Let's turn things over to the South Side, where the White Sox are showing some signs of promise. And I think for the first time in a long time, there might be more excitement going into this offseason on the South Side than there is on the North Side as far as the fan base is concerned, to see what exactly transpires.
Yeah, I would say that they should be pretty psyched about, you know, the Luis Robert era coming in. Eloy had a very, very good August, September. Madrigal, I think, you know, he's got a lot on his plate that, you know, they should bring him up, if not for the opener, at least early on. So, yeah, I think they should be excited. And hopefully the White Sox make some moves this offseason because they, you know, they've got the budget. And Han certainly, after losing out on Machado last year, has some incentive to win one this year.
But Sully, I asked Andy earlier if he thinks Luis Robert will be the opening day center fielder for the White Sox. Do you think he will be up for day one?
Honestly, I don't know. I would think not after they didn't bring him up in September because, you know, if you're not going to bring him up in September, then you might as well wait the extra month in April and make sure that he's, you know, got that extra year of, you know, Sox control. But I do think they'll try and do something like they did with Eloy, you know, like, okay, we'd like you to be on the opening day roster. What do you think about this long-term deal? And so I think it might hinge on that, honestly.
Yeah, I kind of thought that he might be up just because of the fact that they didn't bring him up in September. I thought that, you know, to start the season with him. And I kind of agree with you in that respect, too. I mean, they did make a nice financial commitment to him early when you signed him. But, you know, in this day and age, as you point out, I mean, until the next collective bargaining agreement, when the Players Association probably says we need to get rid of that rule, you know, that might be a consideration.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that it's a stupid rule, and they should have fixed it in the last CBA, but the Players Union did not. So, you know, you're just asking for teams to you know, skirt it. And so I wouldn't blame the White Sox if they did that. And as long as they've, you know, waited this long, maybe it probably financially, if Luis is as good as we all think, you know, he's going to be a franchise-type player, it's certainly much better to get him 7 years instead of six just by waiting a few weeks, especially if you don't think the team's really going to contend next year, which hopefully they do, but I don't think that's you know, a certainty.
Well, if we're talking about service time, the MLBPA, the Players Association, on behalf of Chris Bryant, filed a grievance with the league. That'll be heard this week. I mean, everybody can remember back to 2015 when they waited, a few weeks before they brought him up to manipulate his service time. The gist of it is to prolong his free agency, in short. But what do you think comes from this grievance? I mean, will it affect Chris Bryant directly at all, or is this more so moving forward for the next collective bargaining agreement?
I don't know. It's shocking to me that, you know, they've waited this long for the grievance to be heard. I mean, that's 2015. That's, you know, almost 5 years ago. So, you know, what's the purpose of waiting 4 years, 5 years to make a decision? Certainly they had all the, you know, stats available that they needed to arbitrate this, but they didn't. So I would think there's possibility that if they do decide that, you know, he's a free agent after this year, the Cubs would really have to either trade him or get him to a long-term deal, because there's no way you're going to, you know, keep him all season and then just, you know, let him go for a draft pick. That would be really crazy.
So you think that there is a possibility that it could be ruled that he can become a free agent after 2020? Because right now he's not set to become a free agent until after 2021. But do you think when they have a ruling or whatever comes of this, that could be the case?
I don't know. I don't know the arbiter. I mean, it doesn't seem like it should. I mean, the rules are the rules, and they, you know, they brought him up, I don't know, it was like a day after.
Yeah, it was so obvious.
But, they can also say, well, you know, Mike Alt, who was the guy in the roster he replaced, I think he broke his wrist or broke a bone in his hand or something, like right before they brought him up. So they could say, hey, this was, you know, he was brought up on a need basis, and that's the way it goes.
Sully, one quick question for you here in about 30 seconds. We'll have the World Series Game 4 here on our airwaves tonight. Just thoughts on the World Series to this point, and who do you think pulls it out?
Honestly, I don't think it's going to be a memorable one because of all the stuff that's happening, you know, like with the assistant GM and the, you know, the umpire saying the crazy, or making the crazy tweet, and now you got Trump coming in tomorrow, which I wrote about this morning. That's just going to be a circus, detracting from the game. So, you know, so far I don't think it's been very memorable. If it goes to seven games, it certainly can be. I do like what I see in the Nationals, and I think they are going to win, but I don't know, this idea of Houston using all their bullpen tonight just seems crazy for a World Series game. I can see it, you know, in a regular season and everything, and maybe even in the, you know, the early rounds of the playoffs, but I think a World Series game with no real starter is just, I don't know, you're just turning off fans if you're going to do something like that.
Amen.
It's going to be another long one. I think it was like over 3 hours, and they were in the sixth or seventh inning last night. So
I know. This whole playoff has been like that, and you thought in the World Series it would be, you know, not as bad because they had so many good starters going, but, you know, just more of the same.
Sully, thanks as always. Appreciate the time. Keep up the great work. We'll catch up with you soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right,
thanks,
Paul Sullivan of the Tribune joining us here, and yeah, I agree with him on that. This starter thing, this opener thing, okay, listen, I might be old school, but I am not on board.
If it works, it works. So then I'm not against it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if they think they're only doing it because they figured whatever they figured, it is giving them the best option to win.
All right, we'll talk a little more baseball as we work you towards Game 4 of the World Series coming up here at 6 o'clock on 720 WGN.
First pitch of a plate appearance. The Nationals would have loved to have brought Soto to the plate as the tying run. As it is, that tying run's on deck. So here's Soto with two away. And that's going to do it. Juan Soto caught looking at a called strike three, and the Astros are into the win column for the first time in this World Series.
That, of course, the result of Game 3 last night, and the Astros get a 2-1, or actually get their first win. It's now 2-1 in favor of the Nationals. Game 4 coming up tonight from Washington, D.C. Again, we'll have the coverage for you starting straight up at 6 o'clock here on WGN.
We've got a series, Andy, and I hope it goes seven games.
I
as I mentioned at the top of the show, I'm just really not ready, completely ready, for baseball season to be over. The more baseball, the better. I'm all for it.
Yeah. Do have some sad news in the world of baseball to pass along. Another Major League umpire has passed away. This is a former Major League umpire by the name of Chuck Merriweather. He was behind the plate when the Red Sox ended their championship drought back in 2004. Passed away today after dealing with cancer. He was 63 years of age. Of course, Eric Cooper, the umpire, passed away from a heart attack earlier this month at age 52. So Chuck Merriweather, a very accomplished umpire in his day, did a lot of postseason work and, as mentioned, was behind the plate for that 04 World Series. So our condolences going out to the baseball world and his family, of course, and keep them in your prayers tonight, if you would.
What is Andy Mazur watching on a Saturday night? We've got some options. We've got Notre Dame, Michigan, which I know you expressed earlier. You're not a big fan of either one of these teams.
Not a huge fan.
Did you know, by the way, that they've been playing each other since 1887?
Yeah, I haven't liked it since then either.
And this is just the 45th time they're playing against each other.
Yeah, I wasn't around back then, but I didn't like it back then either.
You also have Tiger Woods competing in Japan. There's a PGA Tour event, so with the time change, you can watch Tiger in primetime, basically.
Yeah.
He's in the lead, my guy Tiger. Everybody knows how much I love Tiger. And then you've got World Series baseball. So what's Andy Mazur tapping into tonight?
I'm baseball pretty much 24-7 during baseball season. So why change now?
Okay.
Yeah.
Going game four.
There's some nice intriguing Chicago angles to this whole thing as well. I mean, with Davey Martinez obviously playing on both sides of town.
Adam Eaton.
Being the bench coach for the Cubs when they won the World Series. Adam Eaton.
Part of that trade that brought Lucas Giolito to town.
And Reynaldo Lopez. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to kind of watch. Even if you're not a fan. I mean, a lot of people don't have a dog in the fight, which is fine. I mean, I get it.
And there's Cubs fans who are bummed because they're hoping see their Cubs in it. But,
and White Sox fans kind of looking forward to what could possibly be here, especially because of that trade with Lucas Giolito getting a whole bunch of accolades. And we should probably talk about that because Lucas, a finalist for the Comeback Player of the Year and also for the Gold Glove.
I'm glad he was named a finalist because I think I kind of, you know, I was looking back on his season. I didn't really think about that much. You don't really think defense first for pitchers.
Yeah.
But he was so solid this year in the field.
He was solid, period. I mean, I think we can all say that. I mean, except for that little hiccup he had with a hamstring issue that cost him, I think, two starts.
And then he
came back and was great after that. And then the White Sox shut him down toward the end of the season with that lat strain, which you can understand.
A very mild one, they said, was precautionary for the most part. You know, last year for the Sox, I understand it can be frustrating for fans. It's been a minute now, Andy, since they've been contenders.
No,
I get it.
It's the truth.
But it is a rebuild. And last year, this season, I should say, the main goal really was individual growth.
Mm-hmm.
As much as that might be tough to swallow, it was. And Andy, there was a ton of individual growth this year. Yoan Moncada, Tim Anderson, Giolito, of course, and Eloy Jimenez, I thought. I mean, he finished, what, 31 home runs?
31
and he missed,
bombs,
a full month of the season, essentially. So,
and started off really slow.
All things considered, you know, I've been trying to get, how do I grade this season, right? It's tough to grade a team.
Yeah.
It's tough to factor in the record when you think about all the, when you keep it all in perspective. It's tough not to give it a good grade, considering the individual growth.
10-game improvement. You got a batting champion. You've got an RBI champion. You've got a guy in Moncada who is on the verge of being a star in Major League Baseball. You got a catcher who came out of nowhere in James McCann, who not only did what he did as far as an all-star in the first half, And yeah, wore down a little bit in the second half. He hadn't played that many games before. No excuse, obviously. But what he did for that pitching staff,
no doubt,
cannot be measured properly.
Giolito said it all season long. And the Sox now have a shortstop who burst onto the national scene, not just here locally.
It's
Tim Anderson's a very recognizable name now. I saw him at he was in Houston.
He was in Houston.
That's how big of a name is. He was on the pregame broadcast. Yep. They wanted to get his thoughts on everything as well. So I was kind of thinking B plus for the season, Andy. As crazy as it sounds for a 73 win team. I think with all things factored in that it is a rebuild and you did get individual growth, it's tough not to give it a solid grade.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give it a solid grade as far as the overall grand scheme of things. Yeah, obviously the White Sox fans would like to see them in contention, as you mentioned. But again, you have to look at what pieces did what they were supposed to do as you build toward what you want to get to.
It's tough to say you're anticipating an offseason and being excited for an offseason, but you should be excited for this offseason if you're a Sox fan. I think the Sox are going to spend more money this offseason than they ever have.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll find out. We're going to take our last time out. We'll come back and wrap things up before we get to World Series Baseball here on 720 WGN. As we wrap things up here on The Beat, a big thanks to our guests here today, Scott King of Blackhawks Crazy Podcast and WGNRadio.com. Also to Paul Sullivan of the Chicago Tribune talking a little baseball. Thanks to you, Kevin Powell, for joining me here today as we get ready for a little World Series Baseball coming our way from our nation's capital tonight.
I want a good one tonight, and I want 7 games out of this series, Andy.
Yeah, and again, tonight, you look at this whole pitching situation, and you're probably getting ready for another one of those long, drawn-out baseball games tonight.
Juan Soto, by the way, of the Nationals, is an absolute star, and
I think he's
got Mike Trout-type potential. I don't know if that's lofty, but he is, to me, going to be one of the best, if not the best, baseball player in the bigs.